Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Happy Saturday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at AndyHermanNFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thank you for being here. No, we're still coming off a loss to the Lions. I know there's still a lot of thoughts of what went wrong, what went right. How important was this game? Was this a sign that Green Bay is not ready yet? Is it going to have to wait till 2025? Is this a sign that Green Bay is ready to compete? A lot of different views. This is basically a Rorschach test for, I think, a lot of different fans with where they're at with this team right now. What I want to do today is take a look at some of the weaknesses that, in my opinion, Detroit exposed. And we're going to go over why it's important that we review those, what they can do to fix it, and what Green Bay really needs to do over these next 4 weeks to get to the point where maybe some of these weaknesses can be a bit mitigated. Now, before we get into those weaknesses, I want to say a couple things here. Number one is some of these we have either known or we've had an inkling about for some time. Is, you know, maybe when Green Bay gets against tougher competition, are some of these things going to expose themselves? Some of these we sort of, like I said, kind of knew about a little bit already, but maybe it brought it a little bit more to the forefront. Number two, in no way is this the final chapter, the final story. These are not written in stone. These are not flaws that Green Bay has to bear, you know, carry with them and have burden them for the remainder of the season. They can overcome them. They are allowed to get better. They are allowed to work on them through the final part of the season and make them so that they're either not flaws or that they can play to their strengths and, you know, hopefully try to mitigate some of these flaws, that they don't come up as often in games that they face really good opponents, which of course they're going to have to do when they get to the playoffs. This is not the final story. All right. They can still grow from this. Number three, the Packers lost by three on the road to the arguably the best team in football. Number one, there's not a ton of shame in that, right? Number two is we don't have to panic. We don't need to overreact. The sky is not falling. Like they were this close to going on the road and beating the best team in football in a huge game. They went blow for blow. Detroit got the better of them, but they're not super far off here, right? We're not talking about a team that, you know, just lost 42 to nothing and we have to go back to the drawing board and be like, oh my goodness, like this is going to be, you know, this is going to be some heavy lifting and they're going to have to revamp a ton of things. We're not trying to, you know, completely renovate this team. It's just a couple fixes here and there that can make you better against opponents like the Detroit Lions, but we don't need to overreact. Number four, this is not meant to be doom and gloom. It's important to look at the flaws so that you can own it and address it and get better at it. And I think, you know, just us as fans, it's important to know what these flaws are so we can watch for them. So we can look for signs of improvement, or we can look for signs of saying like, hey, these things do not seem like they're getting better. And we're going to have to watch them as playoff time comes around to see if teams are looking to consistently and constantly expose some of these weaknesses. But it's not meant to be, again, a final be all end all or a doom and gloom. We're just looking at the things that they need to improve upon over the final course of the season. And that's the final thing here is this is the time, right? In these final four regular season games, where quite frankly, not a ton is at stake. You probably want to do everything you can to avoid that number seven seed. You'd like to get a playoff spot clinched sooner rather than later. But right now, there's not a ton on the line. You probably need to win one more game of your final four in order to get a playoff berth. You probably need to win two to avoid that number seven seed. But right now, it is time for growth. It is time for reflection. It's time to figure out how you can continue to get better week in and week out so that you are playing your best football come January. But now again is the time to learn all these lessons. I mean, ideally, you would have learned them in training camp and preseason so that you would have been ready, but that's not generally how these things work. So let's get to them. What weaknesses did Detroit expose or bring more to the forefront, or even kind of put a little bit of a game plan together for future teams that are playing Green Bay that say, hey, all right, Green Bay struggled with some of this stuff. How can we take advantage of the same things? Number one, and this is a great example of, hey, Detroit exposed this, but maybe not every team is going to be able to expose the same thing. And that's toughness and physicality. Now, I will go a very long way in arguing that Green Bay, from a toughness and physicality standpoint, has taken a pretty significant step over the course of the season. And even just prior to this Lions game, when Matt LaFleur was asked about why this team was playing better in all phases, he pointed to the toughness and physicality. And I tend to agree with him. And I would even argue that in this game, it wasn't like Detroit just ran over Green Bay in really any phase. Like, it was tough sledding for both of these teams in the trenches. Did I want to see this Packers offensive line do better against the Lions defensive front? You bet I did. It didn't work out that way. Detroit was very physical in the trenches, as you would expect them to be. But guess what? There were a lot of times where Green Bay was too. We saw Rashid Walker, you know, throw somebody out of the club. We saw Elgton Jenkins completely blow up a blitzer. We saw the Detroit Lions struggle to run the football against Green Bay, which is not something that has generally happened, especially in the David Montgomery era, right? And Jahmyr Gibbs as well. So there were some things and some signs that Green Bay showed from a toughness and physicality standpoint. I would argue Detroit was still a smidge better than them. Not a ton, but they were still, like, look at the fourth downs, right? When Detroit needed a yard, they were pretty much able to get that yard. They were able to kind of dictate terms and say, we're still going to be able to do this when we absolutely have to have it. It's not to say that Green Bay, again, is going to just get out-physicaled by everyone. It's not to say that they're weak. It's not to say that they, you know, can't hold up against a team like Detroit, because in a lot of the game yesterday, or on Thursday, they showed that they could. But I still think that there is maybe a step to take there. And Detroit showed, like, hey, you might be physical against Miami. You might be physical against San Francisco's backups. You might be physical in some of these other games. But when you come into Detroit and play Detroit, it's going to be a bit of a different story. And you're going to have to even take your, you know, physicality and intensity to another level. So I don't know that this is necessarily something that I would say is exposed. It's just something that if you're comparing the two, I think Detroit is still a little bit of a step up against Green Bay in that situation. And they're going to have to continue to reevaluate how they can continue to get stronger, tougher, more physical, especially in the trenches, especially in those must-have fourth down or goal-to-go situations where you have to get a stop. Number two is maybe the most interesting one on this entire list. I saw a lot of people, some very, very smart people. I talked about this with Aaron Nagler a little bit as well on Let's Talk Football. I saw a lot of really smart people saying Detroit's game plan against Green Bay was incredibly disrespectful to the Packers wide receivers. And the more I watch this game, and I'm almost through grading the game on defense, the more I tend to agree with them. Detroit basically said, we're going to go one-on-one with your wide receivers. Go and watch, and it's eight-man boxes. It is a completely crowded defensive front, and they're bringing guys down after down after down, and they're leaving Dontavian Wicks and Christian Watson and Jaden Reed and those outside wide receivers on an island one-on-one and basically saying, we don't think you can beat our corners, at least not consistently enough. And by doing that, they're saying, we're going to stack the box. We're going to take away Josh Jacobs. You're not going to be able to run the ball efficiently. We're going to keep it one safety over the top. We're going to cram the middle of the field, and we're going to make it so that your wide receivers on the outside have to beat us. It's not all that dissimilar to what teams did to Green Bay when Jordy Nelson went down with the ACL injury. It's a little bit different, but not a ton. They crowded the box, a lot of single high deep safety to make sure that there was somebody patrolling that final end of the field so that they weren't giving up those huge explosive plays, playing press coverage on the outside, making it so that those wide receivers really struggled to get off of coverage. And in the meantime, bringing a ton of pressure on Green Bay, clogging all the run lanes, making it so you couldn't easily run the ball, make it so that you always had pressure, and it was up to the wide receivers to win on the outside. There were times that they did. Christian Watson on the deep ball down the field, just blowing by Carlton Davis. There were times where Matt LaFleur got them into some advantageous looks and some man beaters, specifically like go to the third drive of the game where they hit Christian Watson on that shallow crosser and they hit him and he gets upfield and unfortunately it ends up in a fumble. Then there were a lot of some pick plays, some legal pick plays, some rub routes, some mesh stuff that they did later that was able to work. But Detroit challenged those Packers wide receivers and said, we don't think you can beat us consistently enough. And there was a piece of that that legitimately worked. Now, Green Bay still put up 31 points. Some of that was due to some short fields that they got off the Keyshawn Nixon turnover and the turnover on downs. But I am very interested to see if even going into Seattle next week, if they don't kind of try to copy and paste a very similar approach, drop that extra safety into the box, bring a ton of pressure, stop the run, and make the wide receivers win on the outside. Now, there are some potential fixes to that that we'll go over. We're going to go over the weaknesses and then some ways that they can potentially fix those weaknesses. But it was intriguing. It was very, very intriguing to see how Detroit played this game. And I think it was born out of necessity because I don't think Detroit felt like they could just go coverage and get there with four guys. They didn't in the first matchup. Green Bay just did a really poor job of taking advantage of it. And now Detroit was even more beat up front. So they basically said, screw it. We're just going to bring everyone and we're going to trust our guys that we do have healthy. Carlton Davis, Terrion Arnold, that secondary, Brian Branch, and Kirby Joseph. We're going to trust those guys to cover. That's going to be our strength. We're going to bring everyone else and we'll live with the results. And there were some times where it really, really worked. So it's an interesting one. I'm very intrigued to see how other teams try to maybe emulate that and if Green Bay can have a better plan for it moving forward. Number three is another interesting one, and that is Josh Myers. Now, the first thing I will implore you to do is go out on Kirk Benkert's Twitter and read some of the, he puts out a post and a video of some of the situations that Josh Myers was put in, specifically on the play where Jordan Love had the blow to the head. He does a great job of pointing out how the play clock was winding down. They took a long time for Green Bay to get in the play call and their personnel. Time is running down. It's like 1 or 2 seconds left on the play clock. And Josh Myers is having to snap the ball. They've got a defensive tackle right over him. I mean, right over him, you know, basically like in his face. And what's happening is because the clock is winding down, the center or the defensive tackle knows that, and especially again, knowing that Green Bay's in a silent count, they're going against Detroit on the road. The center in this situation is going to have to go on his first move because there's only a second or two left on the play clock. So the defensive tackle is right over the center. The first move of anything by Josh Myers, that defensive tackle is going because he knows that they have to, or they're going to get a delay of game. So because of the late call, because of the late personnel, because of the play clock is winding down, they're in Ford Field, it's all loud, they have to go in on a silent count, right? As soon as Josh Myers makes any sort of movement whatsoever, that defensive tackle is up out of his stance, the ball gets to Jordan, and the defensive tackle is already between the guard and the center before the center can even get up out of his stance. So there were some situations in this game where Josh Myers was not put in advantageous situations to be successful. I want to be very clear about that. That being said, Josh Myers also struggled mightily in this game. And while I don't want to overreact to anything, it's one game, right? If you listen to my grades video from a few days ago from Packers Dolphins, one of the things that I noted, Josh Myers was one of my lowest graded players last week, was that we were starting to see some bad habits and some 2022, 2023 Josh Myers sort of start to rear its ugly head. Whereas early in this season, whether it's due to a contract year or just things clicking or whatever it might be, it looked like Josh Myers had really started to settle in and really start playing some good football. And I was pretty excited about where Josh was up until really the point where he got hurt, you know, kind of, I want to say week 7, 8, somewhere in there. And then he was definitely banged up for a period of time. I think he missed the game if memory serves correctly. And then really since coming back from that, he hasn't quite been the same. And maybe it's just that he's banged up, right? Which is within the realm of possibility. But where at the beginning of the year, you were for really the first time ever seeing a consistency with Josh Myers that we just had never seen in his career. Like he was going down in, down out, not having these lapses, not having these moments where you're just like, oh my God, Josh Myers. Like he was playing legitimately good football. And I know Green Bay loves him for the checks and the calls at the line of scrimmage and getting everyone aligned correctly. There's a lot of intangible stuff that unquestionably Josh Myers brings to the table. And that's important stuff, but you still have to be able to go out and do your job. All right. Because otherwise, all that other stuff, it's great. But if you can't go out and perform at a high enough level, it all goes out the window. Early in the year, I legitimately thought Josh Myers was playing the best football of his career. Not last year when Green Bay was trying to tell us that, but earlier this year, I really thought he was. As of late, it hasn't been that way, and this was his worst performance of the season. PFF gave him a 0.0 pass blocking grade. Now, that seems very harsh. I don't view it that way. There was definitely some good pass blocking reps on tape, sincerely, but it was not a good game from Josh Myers. And you sort of go over the potential weak link on the line. Really like the way Sean Ryan's playing right now. Rashid Walker has been pretty solid. Elton Jenkins is good. Zach Tom is good. Josh Myers kind of ends up being that weak link if we start seeing this version of Josh Myers pop back up. I'm hopeful that maybe he's just a little bit banged up. Maybe this extended, you know, kind of mini buy can give him the time off that he needs. Whatever it is, I don't know. And like I said, there were some disadvantageous situations for Josh in this one, but the lines went after him. They lined up somebody right over him. They really forced him to make quick decisions, get up out of his stance quickly. He did not do well in the run game. He did not do well in pass pro. It was just a really poor performance from Myers. And this is something that we've seen in the past. We are in year four of the Josh Myers experience at this point. And this is probably just what it is. I'm hopeful, again, fingers crossed, all things, you know, equal. I'm very much hoping that he can play like he did earlier in the season. We get back to seeing that Josh Myers, because it was really fun. It was awesome to watch. But these last, you know, I would say month-ish, it's gotten back into some bad habits and some real inconsistencies up front. And I thought Detroit did a great job of exposing that. Does Green Bay have an answer for that? Tough to say.
We are officially in the thick of holiday season, and there's only one thing better than the spirit of giving, and that's the spirit of winning. And right now, you can make your holidays bigger and brighter with Prize Picks, the absolute best place to get real money action while watching your favorite sports. This holiday season, Prize Picks is giving away 2 free picks in December, and they're giving away $30+ million in rewards during Picksmas. Sign up today. Get $50 instantly when you play $5. You do not even need to win to receive the $50 bonus. It is guaranteed. Think James Cook will get more than 60 yards next week? Joe Burrow more than 1.5 touchdowns? Whatever you think, Prize Picks is the best way to win real money this football season, and you can turn your sports knowledge into real money in less than 60 seconds. This week, I'm going with Amon-Ra St. Brown on Thursday Night Football, yes, against Green Bay, but I'm also going with a huge day from Jaden Reed. During the weekend, I'm going with Aaron Jones to have a big bounce back week against Atlanta and George Kittle to have a monster day against Chicago. However you want to pick, make sure to download the app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. That's the Prize Picks app using code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after your first $5 lineup. So what are you waiting for? Prize Picks, run your game. There's absolutely nothing like seeing a football game live, and that's even more so in Green Bay than in any other city or in any other stadium. I had the absolute best time going to the Houston game earlier this year as my son got to see his first regular season game live, and let me just tell you, it was absolutely perfect. And there's no question about it. The best and easiest way to get tickets is on Game Time. Game Time has a new feature called Game Time Picks that makes getting tickets to see your favorite teams play live even easier. When I started using Game Time, it was so easy to use, and Game Time filtered out all the extra garbage to show me just the incredible deals that they had on all the great seats. It was simple, efficient, and unbelievably easy to use. It was also super helpful seeing the seat views before buying. And enough with all the false advertising on pricing. Turn on all-in pricing on Game Time to see the total upfront cost with no surprise fees at checkout. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code PACKADAY for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code PACKADAY for $20 off. Download Game Time today. What time is it? Game Time.
Middle of the field. Saw it against Miami. Saw it against this past week against Detroit. Now, there are reasons for this, and some of the other issues that are going on that we're going to talk about in just a moment lead to this middle of the field being so soft and open. One of the things that really needs to happen is your linebackers need to do a better job of getting depth in their zone coverage. They are too shallow. They are not deep enough, and they are allowing stuff over their head, which leads to some of those explosive plays. You want to keep everything in front of you in those situations. And not obviously not everything, there's going to be players behind you, but you need to get deeper so the quarterback is less likely to try to throw it over your head because you're going to get enough depth, or maybe you pass, or, you know, bat it down or tip it up or whatever it might be, or maybe just get a pick. You want to keep it, you know, the check downs in front of you. If they check it down, great. You can go and make that tackle, rally to the football, maybe try to punch it out, whatever it might be, or maybe that ball gets tipped up and you can get a pick that way. But they need to do a better job of getting depth. They need to do a better job in man-to-man coverage and just understanding where these wide receivers and tight ends are trying to sit down in some of these zones. Isaiah McDuffie's been really, really rough the last 2 weeks in coverage. You know, getting Edgerrin Cooper back could definitely, I think, help here in a very significant way. But the middle of the field has been a pretty significant issue. And one of the reasons that it has been an issue is another one of the weaknesses that we saw in this game was the outside corner position. And when you have to keep those extra safeties over the top because you don't trust your corners on the outside quite as much, it makes it so that you can't a lot of times drop that extra safety into the box and clog that middle of the field up. And then it leads to your linebackers being in disadvantageous situations. When you don't have Edrian Cooper out there, you all of a sudden now have Isaiah McDuffie and Nickel where you don't really want him in some very disadvantageous coverage situations. And then so much so that they basically stopped putting him in coverage and blitzed him instead of Quay Walker, even though Quay Walker is the better blitzer because they couldn't trust McDuffie to be the lone guy in coverage. It just created this sort of domino effect where you thought you had this foundation built and now one piece fell out and it just topples over because it just that one domino falls down and all of them follow after it. So the lack of corner talent on the outside with Jair being out specifically leads to the safeties having to play over the top because you're not trusting those guys one-on-one on the outside, which leads to the middle of the field being open. Add on top of that the injuries, and now Isaiah McDuffie's got to, like, and it just starts falling apart piece by piece. You get Jair Alexander back, you feel more comfortable with your corners on the outside, then you can drop that safety into the box. The safety closes the middle of the field, your linebackers aren't put in as many disadvantageous situations, and everything starts making a bit more sense. But right now, Jeff Hafley is playing, you know, sort of a whack-a-mole game of you hit one mole down and two more pop up because you're making sure that they're not getting those explosive plays, but now the middle of the field's open and you're making sure you're covering for, you know, Carrington Valentine and Eric Stokes, but now Isaiah McDuffie's in a bad spot. So you drop that safety down, give those guys some help, and now all of a sudden the outside wide receivers are in advantageous situations against the corners. It's not a perfect scenario out there for him right now, meaning Jeff Hafley. Hopefully getting some of these guys back, I think, will do wonders, but that was not the situation against Detroit. And if Jair Alexander does find himself out in the playoffs, you're going to have to find a solution to that issue. And it's not an easy solution to find an issue to in December in trying to find a new body at that spot, right? It's not an easy one. Next one is strong starts. This is, again, something that reared its ugly head in this one. And this is one of those ones that we've had an inkling of it, right? 28-0 to Minnesota, 24-3 against Detroit. And now they get down, 17-7 at halftime in this one? 7-0 right out of the gate. Green Bay has not come out strong in these NFC North games. They were even down 13-7 to Chicago. We saw how valuable that it is when they can get out to that strong start. We saw it against Miami. We saw it against San Francisco. And it's just a night and day difference. They took control of the game early, and it just, they never looked back. Put Miami and San Francisco in those really difficult situations. Completely flipped the script. Now, Minnesota, Detroit, Philly, tougher teams than those teams that we just mentioned where Green Bay got off to the strong start. It doesn't necessarily have to be that you're up, you know, 21-0 or something. It can just be that you're not down 24-3, that you're even, that you're staying toe-to-toe with them until you kind of settle into the game a little bit. I thought Green Bay looked tight and just unsure of themselves at times to begin this game, which is very unlike them, and they've got to get that figured out. But they need a stronger start to some of those games to make it so that they are not getting behind and now having to work their way back into just tying the game or take a one-point lead or whatever it might be, and then Detroit is still able to do everything on offense because that game is close. If Green Bay is up by 14 points, 10 points, or again, at least not down, it makes it so that Green Bay's offense is in a better spot and Detroit's offense has to work a little bit harder in that situation. The other one we learned very, very clearly in this game, screen game defense. Man, was that Lions screen game on point, number one. But number two, Green Bay was not ready for it. And even after Detroit showed their hand over and over and over and over and over again and said, we're going to continue to run this stuff, key plays late in the game where you could kind of see it coming, like, hey, guys, it's probably going to be a screen here. Guess what? It was a screen, and guess what? It was still successful. That was frustrating, to say the least. And I think Green Bay is going to have to go back to the drawing board a little bit with this one because Ben Johnson just ate their lunch, spit it back in their face, and said, we're just going to do this very simple play. I can't even begin to tell you how frustrating it was to watch, you know, Jared Goff on the replay just complete these super simple passes that were very, very effective against Green Bay's defense because they were over-aggressive. And I talked about this the other day, but you can just imagine what they talked about all week long. Got to hit Jared Goff. Got to hit Jared Goff. Got to hit Jared Goff. Get him off his spot. Make him uncomfortable. You got to get there. This is such an important game to get pressure. Ben Johnson knew it. He's like, all right, you're going to be aggressive in trying to get to Jared Goff.
We're going to use that aggressiveness against you, and we're going to screen all over the damn place all game long. And he did. So it's great that Green Bay's wanted to be more aggressive and bring some extra guys and say, look at what we can do. But you got to be cognizant of the counters and the screens and the trap plays and things like that, because they're dying for you to get aggressively upfield so they can use that momentum against you. Clutch moments, and specifically clutch moments on defense. This has been an issue for far too long for Green Bay. It was a, you know, real pain point in the Joe Barry era, but it showed itself again this game against Detroit. Every time Green Bay got a lead and it felt like, okay, can relax a little bit, Detroit got the lead right back. And in the end of this game, Green Bay takes the lead. And what does Detroit do? They go right down the field, score a touchdown, and take the 3-point lead. Green Bay had a 4-point lead. Detroit goes right down, scores a touchdown, and it's a 3-point lead Detroit. What does Green Bay do? They march right back down. They get the game-tying field goal. You wish they would have got the go-ahead touchdown, but they get the game-tying field goal, and you know that you're going to have to get a stop. It's the clutch. The game's on the line. Defense, it's up to you. Can you be the one that gets them out of this situation? And they were not. And I think that continues to be a major issue. Is like, I don't know that anyone in Green Bay right now, if the opposing team is tied 31-31 or even down or anywhere in a one-score game, right? You just kind of feel like they're going to be able to move down against Green Bay's defense, and Green Bay is not going to come up with that clutch play, especially against really good teams. It's been an issue for far too long. And Detroit exploited it once again, exposed it once again, and said, hey, we're not going to be afraid of you. If we're tied, we know that we're going to go down and get that win. And that's exactly what they did in this game. So coming up with those huge clutch stops, something that still continues to avoid Green Bay in big games. Fourth down defense. This one speaks for itself. And this kind of goes to clutch plays as well, right? There's nothing bigger than a fourth down. Everything's on the line on that play. Either they're going to get the first down and continue, and especially when it's in red zone and fourth and goal, and they're going to get the touchdown, or you have the ability to get the stop and completely flip the script and make Dan Campbell look like an idiot. Over their two games against Detroit so far, Dan Campbell's been the one that's making Green Bay's defense look like idiots, and he looks like the genius for going for it on fourth down all but one time where Green Bay got that one stop. The rest, I think they're 6 of 7 against Green Bay. Detroit will take that every single time. That's Detroit dictating terms to what they want and saying, we're going to continue to move the ball. And I think the other thing that was frustrating here too, there were so many times on third down, 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8, where it felt like Green Bay was willing to concede 5 or 6 yards to make it 4th and 2, 4th and 1. You can't do that against Dan Campbell. That's just an extension of he's going to go. You're basically asking him to go for it on fourth down. And that's not where you want to be. You got to feel like if it's 3rd and 8, you got to get them to 4th and 8. You got to get an incomplete pass. You got to get a pressure. You got to get a sack. You got to get something, because if they pick up 6 or 7, they're going to go for it. And they're probably going to pick it up. So you can't play that. You can play that way against a lot of teams. Detroit is not a team that you can play that way. And those third down situations, getting them into 4th and longs rather than 4th and shorts, and then on 4th and shorts, coming up with stops was far too difficult for Green Bay. And it's something that they're going to have to improve moving forward. I know right now is a tough time for everyone. Grocery and gas prices are soaring, and with the holidays coming up, we could all use a little bit more disposable income. And when you've got less than stellar credit, your options can be limited. But I've got some great news for you. Kickoff can simplify credit building with plans that are the fastest and easiest way to safely jumpstart your credit, making what feels impossible possible. And best of all, no credit check is required. I absolutely love Kickoff because of its simplicity and its results. Now, I discovered Kickoff online and it helped me build my credit fast. And as far as those results, users with credit under 600 increased their credit by an average of 28 points in the first month. It's simple. You make on-time payments, credit bureaus see your good behavior, and your credit grows fast. And you can start building credit immediately for only $1 in your first month. Want more proof? Kickoff has over 100,000 positive reviews on the App Store, and 98% are 5 stars. So join over 1 million people building credit with a Kickoff credit account today. Build your credit fast with Kickoff. Get your first month for $1. That's 80% off the normal price when you go to getkickoff.com/packaday today. That's Kickoff without the C, getkikoff.com/packaday. Must sign up via getkickoff.com/packaday to activate the offer. Offer applies to new kickoff customers first month only. Subject to approval. Average impact of 28-point credit increase in the first month based on Equifax VantageScore 3.0 changes for kickoff customers with starting credit below 600 who made their first on-time payment between January 2021 and March 2024. Payment and credit activity outside kickoff can have an impact on your credit. Terms and conditions may apply. Offer subject to change. Individual results may vary. And then last but not least, the inexperience, the youth, and just staying even keeled and not getting too high or too low. We had Matt LaFleur with an altercation with a fan, which, by the way, I don't hold against Matt LaFleur. He was having his guys back. I love that. I love that he had his guys back. It sounds like the fan was doing the throat slash to his players, and Matt LaFleur went to bat for, like, he became Papa Bear in that situation. It's like, you're not messing with my guys. I love that. But Matt LaFleur's, getting in arguments with fans. Quay Walker's pushing guys to the ground. Yes, Dan Skipper went full WWE and sold it like he just got speared by Roman Reigns. But to me, there were multiple moments in this game where I thought Green Bay could have done a better job of just staying calm to begin the game, staying even keel, not getting too high, not getting too low, just going out and playing your brand of football. And instead, it felt like Detroit got under their skin, doing the celebrations, and just, it felt like they were in Green Bay's head very early on. And that's part of being a young team and understanding of, like, all right, like, they're going to, of course, try to get under our skin. Let's take calm. Let's just do our thing. And that comes with experience. That comes with time. It's easier said than done. But if they play Detroit again, especially in Detroit, they're going to have to do a better job of controlling their emotions, staying even keeled. And while they may be the younger team, the more inexperienced team, showing that they can handle those big moments and big game situations. That was a primetime game, heavyweight fight, and it felt like, again, Green Bay was maybe a little bit tight, let their emotions get the best of them at times. Those are things that they're going to have to get better and learn, and with that comes age and experience. So how are these things fixed? Well, physicality and toughness, they're going to have to continue to play that brand of football, show it against Seattle, New Orleans, and even try in Minnesota, right? I think Minnesota is going to be a great test for that. Can they continue to be more dominant, more physical, more aggressive, and not just aggressive, right? Because we talked about the screen game and being over-aggressive, but can you bring the fight to them in the good way, right? Not the pettiness, not shoving a guy down after the play, but can you play that physical brand of football? You can continue to work on it through the remainder of this year. Wide receivers, I do think Romeo Doubs coming back would help in some of those one-on-one situations. I think Matt LaFleur probably could have adjusted a little bit sooner to getting into some of those man beaters and just making it so that the wide receivers had a little bit easier sledding than having to just get off the coverage in those situations. He eventually went to more condensed formations and went into some three wide receiver bunch sets and some motions and things like that. Just took him a little bit too long to get there. But in clutch moments where you have to go one-on-one against good corners, it's also going to be paramount that guys like Wicks, Doubs, Reed, Melton, whomever, do get off of those corners, regardless of how grabby or whatever they are, and that you're making those plays. And Green Bay just didn't do quite a good enough job of that against Detroit, but I think it's fixable. Josh Myers, some of the stuff that Kurt Benkert said, get the play call in faster, allow so that your silent count has a couple different options that you can look up a couple times and they can't just tee off on you. That's going to make Josh Myers' job easier. And even if you do make it easier and he's not performing, well, then you have to look at, is there a better version of that offensive line that's out there? Do you want to move Elton inside? Do you want to do something different? I don't think Green Bay is going to go in that direction. And I'm hopeful that Josh can bounce back, but Josh needs to play at the level that he was earlier this season. Middle of the field, hopefully getting Jaire Alexander back on the outside settles that corner room, meaning you can bring that safety down more often, meaning that you can close the middle of the field a little bit more. Hopefully you get Edgerton Cooper back that takes care of that middle of the field a little bit more as well. Then you have Quay and Cooper that are that really nice tandem where either of them can blitz, either of them can cover, and you don't have one guy that can't cover, so he has to be the blitzer. Just think that's going to be a better tandem and help you in the middle of the field as well. Outside corner, we just talked about, hopefully getting Jaire Alexander will fix that one. Getting off to strong starts in games, I don't have a perfect answer to that. I think sort of number 10, though, of like just gaining more experience, understanding that these are going to be long games, big fights, and don't get too ahead of yourself. Just run your offense, run your defense. Don't try to do too much. Do your 1/11th. Have that calm, even-keeled approach, and hopefully they can get off to stronger starts and not be a double-digit deficit against Detroit both times and Minnesota and very, very early in these games. Screen game,
again, not getting too aggressive, making sure that a guy is dedicated to the running back or tight end, and just kind of keeping an eye on some of those screens. There's a lot of things that defensive coordinators can do. But like I said, they're going to have to go back to the drawing board a little bit and figure out a way that they can mitigate those screens and not make them, you know, where the team can just spam them the entirety of the game and you have no answer for it. That is an unacceptable aspect. Clutch defense, that's nothing that you can, like, you just have to go out and show it and do it. There's no anecdote. There's no anything that I can just say and be like, yep, this'll do it. You just got to go do it. In clutch moments, you have to have your heart rate stay calm and you just have to go out and perform your duties. And Green Bay has not done a good enough job of that. I wish I had an easy button that just fixed it, but you got to prove that in big games, and they may not get another one of those truly until playoff time. Fourth down defense, same kind of thing, right? Because you can run a variety of different things on fourth down. Getting lined up in the first place would be a huge help. You know, Eric Wilson was getting over there way late. Detroit did a great job of putting Amon-Ra St. Brown in the backfield and a Jahmyr Gibbs at wide receiver, and it just kind of messed with them. And then they went tempo as well, which really messed with them. But getting lined up would certainly help you in those situations. And then experience, they just gained some. They gained some by losing that game to Detroit. They'll gain more experience over the course of the next 4 weeks. Just keep stacking that experience, keep learning, keep getting better. And like I said, that's what these next 4 weeks are truly for. They have four games left. Seahawks, Vikings, both going to be solid tests. Now's the time to fix these issues, correct the flaws, make them so that they're not these easily attackable things by really good teams like Detroit. If you can clean some of this stuff up, Green Bay really will have the ability to take a significant run in the playoffs. And maybe, who knows, the sky's the limit at that point, right? Right now, again, is the time to prepare because your final exams are coming up in a month. You're going to have a variety of different tests. You don't know what to expect. You don't know what team you're going to have to play. But those tests are coming up. Those exams are coming up. And they need to do the study now, the self-scout now, and figure out how to fix these issues now so that come January, they won't be an issue and Green Bay can maybe even use these as strengths or at least mitigate any level of major weakness that Detroit showed that you can exploit if you do the right things at the right moments. That is going to do it for me today. Thank you so much for joining me. I always appreciate it. Hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, make sure to like, subscribe, comment, do whatever you can. Even if you didn't like it, please make sure to like, subscribe. Well, maybe don't comment, but still give it a thumbs up if you'd be so kind in your heart. Appreciate you a ton. Shout out to our Hall of Fame and All-Pro members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Jennifer Wright, Boom Handel, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, Dave McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Huang, Arnaldo Espinoza, Peter Rataka, SoCal Pack, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gasford, Step Keat, Lovin' Football, Dylan Patscott, and Bobby Santoro. I will see you guys right back here tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.